Our second case is 2021-981 Laura Valentine versus Cedar Fair LP. For the appellant, Mr. Hudson.
Thank you and good morning, Madam Chief Justice and members of the court. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. May it please the court and counsel. My name is David Hudson from the law firm of Reminger, and I represent Cedar Fair LP in this matter. For more than 100 years, Ohio law has held that a revocable license grants a personal, revocable, and non-assignable privilege to act on the land of another. Cedar Fair's 2020 season pass is no exception. The season pass granted a privilege of conditional access to the Cedar Point Amusement Park when it was open. The Sixth District concluded that Cedar Fair's season pass was both a revocable license and a contract, the breach of which may give rise to a claim for relief. The decision from the Sixth District, however, is wrong for two primary reasons. First, it blurs the lines between the distinct characteristics of contract and that of a revocable license under Ohio law. Second, the decision ignores the plain language of the season pass, which only requires Cedar Fair to permit pass holders into its parks on regularly scheduled operating days, which are subject to change without notice.
So what if Cedar Point said we're only going to open one day a year? Would that be okay?
Under this particular pass, so the nature and the characteristics of every revocable license matters. But when you look at the revocable license, you have to look at the nature and character of what's purchased. And in this instance, the season can change. Now, that's not exactly the facts that we have, of course, but I understand your point, and that is, could it be open for one day, 10 days, 20 days, and is that sufficient to constitute a season? And the answer is yes. And the explanation for that is becomes more clear if you compare it to a single day revocable license, like an admission ticket to a particular game, Ohio State, Michigan, for example. When those events do not occur, you know, when we separate out the purchase of the revocable license from the contract to purchase the license, you have a contract for offer and acceptance with consideration. The consideration actually is the revocable license. And at that point, the holder is in possession of a revocable license. When you have a single day event, if that event doesn't occur, there's a failure of consideration. So you come back to the original agreement and you have a failure of consideration. There was no consideration there because they actually didn't give anything. The difference in your point and in my point here is we have a season, and a season is defined by the nature and character of this particular license as being conditional, and there's a right to change. And that was acknowledged when these parties purchased that agreement, right? If you're buying an absolute right of access, that's different. It costs more. Right? They're buying a conditional right of access, and in those terms and conditions, it makes it clear that there's no refunds, it's subject to revocation, and the season could change. And that those are the conditions that you must accept when you buy the pass.
But your position is this wasn't, or is it, is your position that this wasn't a contract of any kind?
That's correct. Well, no, it's a little different than that. So let me clarify, and I was going to get to this point, but I'll get there right now. And that is, when you look at what happened in this particular transaction, we have Cedar Fair offering a season pass for $99, right? The acceptance on the other side is Valentine agreeing to purchase a pass and pay the $99 fee, right? At this point, Cedar Fair offers the consideration for that transaction, which is the 2020 season pass. The transaction is satisfied, the contract is satisfied. Valentine now holds a 2020 season pass. She can do with it as she pleases, but it has conditional access and allows the right of entry subject to the terms and conditions, which, you know, in this case, we know there are conditions. One of those conditions is the definition of season can change and the number of operating days can change.
But you argue that, at least if I recall in your brief, you're saying the fact that when Valentine purchased the pass and Cedar Point gave her the pass, that the transaction was done.
Correct.
So Correct. Regardless of whether that pass actually even allowed access, whether they sold it to her and decide, no, we're not going to have any access this year.
I understand your point, and actually this goes to my earlier point, and that is the consideration for the transaction, right? So to the extent that that contract ends up not having any consideration attached to it, now we have to go back to that and say, yes, If that event doesn't occur, to your point, the Ohio State-Michigan game, to your point, there is no season at all, meaning there's no day, there's no 3 days, there's no 10 days, there's no 25 days, right? Now, in this instance, we would have a failure of consideration, and the same would be true as a single-day event ticket, right? You go back to that original agreement, and we say a failure of consideration, as opposed to the question of sufficiency of consideration, which I think is presented in this instance, right? We had a season. People disagree as to whether or not it was long enough or whether it should have had more days, but we had a season. So there was consideration in that transaction, and I think that's the difference that I would point out in terms of your question.
Then what about how this case was disposed of at the trial court level?
Well, I think your question, correct me if I'm misunderstanding.
Oh, you probably haven't.
I think your question points to the motion to dismiss. And what we have before us at the trial court was a motion to dismiss, and that was predicated on the fact that the complaint incorporated the website of Cedar Fair, number one, and also the season pass terms were associated with the website.
Isn't there some legitimate issues of material fact about what constitutes a season?
No, because I do think when you look at the nature and character of a revocable license under Ohio law, and you look at their distinct characteristics, you can reconcile those characteristics, which are not a contract, with the idea that you have terms that some might define as illusory, some might define as could create the impossibility of performance in certain circumstances. We don't raise those defenses because we don't agree that the 2020 season pass is a contract. So of course we wouldn't raise those defenses. And of course that matters when you look at the nature and character of a revocable license, right? If we're going to have terms that don't have conditions, the ability to change under circumstances, whether it be weather, tornado, or other items, well then, you have a contract, and folks who aren't given a right of access are entitled to proportionate refund. That's not what was intended with the pass.
Well, before 12B6 motion, though, I mean, all the plaintiff has to do is make out a colorable claim.
Correct. And the claims in this case, right, have two equitable claims for relief and a breach of contract. In our view, this court could easily conclude there is no breach of contract here because there is sufficiency of consideration by Cedar Fair offering a season. And but in that instance, there can be no breach of contract.
Well, and I'm not saying that ultimately she prevails on the argument, but aren't the facts sufficient for at least all three of her claims, you know, whether she can actually prove them might really be more of an issue for summary judgment, and I stated the standard wrong earlier to you. But she may not survive summary judgment, but we're a notice pleading jurisdiction. So the Court of Appeals found she at least gets past 12B6, right?
I totally understand your point. Okay. And my response to that is similar to the Sixth District Court of Appeals and as it relates to the analysis that we see. The Sixth District made the same mistake, and it's not necessarily in all these the case law that we see where there's inconsistent analysis about breach of contract. It depends on how that matter was presented to the court. I'm not saying that the courts made a mistake. What I could be suggesting is the lawyers made a mistake in the manner in which it was presented to the court, and that is they didn't comprehend the unique nature and characteristic of a revocable license and its importance under the law. And if you don't comprehend that and you confuse it with principles of contract, well, now you get an analysis that I think we see in some of the decisions that may be inconsistent, granted, but that's the mistake that the Sixth District made, right? And if you look at what we have in front of us with a revocable license and you look at the offer and acceptance of the situation, which was really for the sale of a season pass, now you have a totally different scenario that comes up, and I think one that is appropriate for a motion to dismiss and need not be held back for a motion for summary judgment, and it's primarily because of the posture of the case in the trial court, right? And I'll tell you that if you look at some of the other cases, Goodrich, for example, and others that I think Valentine may rely upon or may speak about or not, you'll see them in the brief, is that those cases are postured dramatically different than the one we see here. Those cases were presented on a plausibility of contract claim, right? Is the case plausible on its facts? That is not the situation that we have here. Our motion is actually frames this up in a different manner, and that is reviewing whether or not it could ever be a contract and explaining what the purpose and the importance of a revocable license is as a matter of law.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. Are you saying that this is not any question of contract, even though she paid money as opposed to someone who was gifted the tickets?
No, I'm not saying there's no question of contract. I'm saying the question of contract is satisfied by delivery of the season pass. And in the absence, there is no allegation, by the way, in this case, that there was revocation of the season pass. So the 2020 season pass remained in her possession throughout all of 2020. And for that matter, it was available to her for all of 2021. So she had that season pass, and it was subject to its terms and conditions and granted her that privilege of access that she had purchased. But that contract component was satisfied upon the delivery. And after the delivery, now you have a revocable license that has to be viewed as a privileged conditional right of access, meaning I get to enter the property without being a trespasser.
But couldn't we still analyze it according to contract based on the terms that went with that season pass? Because really there was a lot of leeway for Cedar Fair to say we can't open the park.
There is a lot of leeway, and it's intended to be that way, and it's priced that way accordingly, and that's the practical perspective of what we're looking at, and that's why revocable licenses are so important under Ohio law, right? They're designed to be that way. To your point, though, no, I don't think you can have a privilege and a right at exactly the same time, meaning the revocable license can't be both, right? It's inconsistent. A contract normally in the usual case would not be freely revocable, and there would be penalties, right? In this instance, we have terms and conditions that say up front, that is exactly what this is not, and that's the intention. And I'll tell you that, you know, if you were to construe it as a contract, you're going to look at those terms and say, well, geez, isn't this an illusory promise? The answer is yes, it probably is. But it's not a contract, it's a revocable license, and under that analysis, I think we have to look at it differently and say those contract interpretation principles should not apply.
But if we don't see it as an illusory promise, it can be construed as a contract, correct?
No, and I think I may have missed the first part of your question, but
I said if we don't see it as an illusory promise, we can look at it as a contract, can't we?
No, I really don't think you can. And I think because you have a contract analysis over here for purchase and sale, otherwise you would be suggesting that there's two contract analysis, one for the purchase and sale of a revocable license, and now you have a new contract, which is the revocable license. And what you're saying is essentially you're guaranteeing a right of access that was never intended. So I think you can't follow the purpose and spirit of the language and reach that conclusion. I think it's impossible. It's impossible. And let me just wrap up and say, you know, if Valentine was looking for an absolute right of access, certainly she could have purchased it. That is not what she purchased. She purchased a conditional right of access. The price point reflects that. And for that reason, we respectfully request this court adopt the legal position of appellant on the interpretation of Ohio license law and reverse the Sixth District's opinion and reinstate the trial court's dismissal of the complaint. Thank you.
Ms. Fiorelli?
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, Associate Justices. May it please the court. My name is Nicole Fiorelli. I'm with the law firm of Dworkin and Bernstein, and I represent the plaintiff appellee, Laura Valentine, in this case. The Sixth District got it right when they allowed plaintiffs breach of contract claim and our unjust enrichment and money hadn't received claims to proceed. Plaintiff purchased a season pass. She contracted for a season pass to visit Cedar Point that included the months of May and June. Cedar Point did not provide her with access during the months of May and June. That states a claim for breach of contract, regardless of whether that season pass also constituted a revocable license, and regardless of whether Cedar Fair had the ability to change certain operating dates.
What would happen if Cedar Point just closed down for a weekend because they had a big storm? Would she be entitled to a refund for that?
I don't think that sort of claim would be successful, Your Honor. We contracted for a season.
Well, and what if the storm lasted for a week? I mean, what if they knocked out the electricity and they were closed for a week? Would she be entitled to a refund?
I think that Cedar Point would have the defense of substantial performance. And in a five-month time period, if they were only closed for a weekend or a week, I think they would argue that they substantially complied with the contract in providing the season, and that would be a question for the jury about whether that doctrine, whether that defense would apply. Here, however, obviously
so if they were closed even a couple days, you know, we go to the jury? It's a jury question?
If they raised the defense of substantial performance, they could raise that defense of substantial performance.
You don't think they could just close?
I don't think that claim would succeed. I don't think a breach of contract claim would succeed over 2 days over a five-month time period.
But do you agree that it would get past the motion to dismiss stage?
I don't know that it would. Generally, substantial performance when raised is a defense. I don't know what they would do with 2 days. I think that would be difficult for the plaintiffs. Here, however, obviously we have a two-month time period that we're talking about. The purpose of the contract, which was not just to, you know, she bought it and they emailed it over and up, contract's done. No, the contract was to actually provide the season. The contract is not for the piece of paper. The contract is for access to the rides and attractions during the season.
Council, did Cedar Fair have the ability to define their season?
Sure, they could have put that right in their contract as to what dates season.
When 2020 rolls around, she purchases it, and then we have the issues that closed the park. Did they make that decision themselves, Cedar Fair?
They did not, Your Honor. They closed in response to, obviously, the orders that were in place at the time. But breach of contract doesn't look at whose fault it was or whether there was good faith. The fact is she contracted for these 2 months, and she was not provided those 2 months.
But she didn't contract for just those 2 months.
Right. She had contracted for the whole season, which included those 2 months that were closed.
And if, Del, the park was closed due to orders from the pandemic, would she have to prove that she intended to go for those 2 months?
No, Your Honor. I mean, the season pass gives you the right to go during that time period. So whether you just end up deciding to go one day or every single day of
Or
no days at all, you're contracting for that right to be able to do that. She could have gone every single day, and that's why
she contracted for the right to use the park when the park is open.
Correct.
Okay.
And Cedar,
there's nothing to define when that park had to be open.
That would be the season, Your Honor. They're talking about regularly scheduled operating days within the season. So as the Court of Appeals noted, yes, they have the ability to change their operating days for weather or things of that nature. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were allowed to change the season, because it's the words are regular operating day of the season. So we have to look at what season means. It's undefined what season means in the contract, so then we need to look for the ordinary meaning. We pled in our complaint that season was May through October. That's consistent with what Cedar Fair had on their website, the history of the park. We believe that discovery will show that the season historically and as it intended to be in 2020 was in fact May through October, and therefore by the fact that they didn't provide that season access for 2 months out of the 5 months.
But how do you get around the language of the contract that says, you know, subject to close or when open, or the part of the purchase for the season pass that Ms. Valentine agreed to, that yes, I have access when it's open, and that there are conditions that make it unavailable, and this could happen at any time for any reason.
Right. I think that there is the ability to cancel an operating day within the season.
But the pass doesn't say a day. It doesn't say once a week, once a month, a weekend. It says for any reason at any time.
Right. And again, though, we have to, it's not, it's defined by the season. So if they want to cancel, you know, half of the operating days, then they're going to have a problem because they had to comply with the main purpose of the contract was to provide access for the season. So again, it gets into the question of, did they substantially perform?
So you filed your complaint before May?
Correct.
So I assume someone notified your client that they weren't going to open as anticipated in May?
In response to the government orders and Cedar Fair's
announcements. So you file your complaint
correct.
In April, and your complaint says it is reasonably anticipated plaintiff and the class will not be able to use their 2020 season pass during 2020. But they actually did.
Correct.
When the government finally lifted their orders, they opened for the season.
Correct. And we also applied in your complaint, Your Honor, that we were looking for relief for the proportionate amount of time that the park remained closed. Obviously, we weren't aware of if or when the park was going to be open. But the park ended up being closed, obviously, for a significant portion of the 2020 season.
Council, do you disagree with your opposing counsel that the wording on the website was incorporated into the complaint?
We don't dispute that. As far as, are you talking about the Gold Pass terms and conditions?
Yeah.
We agree that they're part of the contract here, yes.
Part correct. Of the complaint.
I'm sorry?
That they were part of the complaint.
We referenced them in our complaint,
okay.
Yes, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I misunderstood your question.
Thank you.
You know, as far as opposing counsel's comments about, you know, a revocable license and a contract cannot exist at the same time, that's belied by a plethora of case law that we cited in our brief that holds that you can have a revocable license and a contract at the same time. And that makes sense because with a revocable license, they're saying you can't sue to get access to our property. And indeed, we didn't bring suit to be allowed in May and June, you know, and a contract provides remedy if you paid to have access and then were denied access. So they're dealing with two separate things there. The cases that they cite talking about you can revoke a license without refund, those cases either A, didn't have a contract. For example, the Corey case out of the Fifth District, the Norwood versus Forest Converting Company. So that wasn't even an issue. And then in Turner versus Burgundy Bay Association, there was a contract and it said, you're gonna have your license revoked if you don't pay the fee. And the person didn't pay the fee, so their license was revoked.
Okay, well, assume that there is a contract. How do you avoid the language, all operating dates and hours are subject to change without notice, all rides and attractions are subject to closing and cancellations for weather or other conditions? I mean, that seems, if that's your contract, it seems that they can change the operating dates and hours without notice.
A couple of things. I mean, one, if it's a contract and they have the ability to change things at their discretion and provide, as you had an earlier question, you know, no days or one day of the season, then it would be illusory because when it's in complete control of the one party, whether or not they're going to perform, that's an illusory contract. It would therefore be void and our equitable claims would be actionable at that point. But I don't agree that the language actually allows them this ability to close so often to prevent them from having a season. We can't ignore the part that that they're entitled or they're required to provide a season. As far as open rides go, that section, which is in the first paragraph of the terms, talks about open rides on any regularly scheduled operating day of the season. That doesn't give them the right to close the park. I mean, it's talking about rides that are, whether they're going to be open or closed on operating day.
I was actually talking about the third paragraph where it says all operating dates and hours are subject to change without notice. And the next sentence says all rides and attractions are subject to closing and cancellations for weather or other conditions. That seems to give them a pretty broad ability to close down when they want.
Yes, and again, I would say that they can only do that. They have to be cognizant of the fact that they're also promising a season. So you can't close, you know, decide not to operate to the extent that you're still not providing someone a season. And again, I think that's where the substantial performance issue comes in.
So are you saying
the language regularly scheduled operating day of the season is the distinction that supports the, I guess, the breach of contract claim that you're making, that this language doesn't really address that a whole chunk of the season is gone.
Right, Your Honor. We believe that that language gives them the right to close on certain days during the season. We don't believe that it gives them the right to not provide the season. The operating dates are within the season. That language has to mean something. It provides a duration of when the park opens for the year and closes for the year.
You don't think that other conditions might encompass shutdown orders from the government because of a pandemic?
Sure. They can close. We weren't suing to have them stay open. We're suing because despite the reason that they closed, they still promised to provide access for the five-month season and didn't open for 2 months of the season. They didn't raise a defense of impossibility, which, you know, it wasn't possible for them to open, but they were very clear they were not raising that as a defense to the contract, probably because if you don't have a contract, we still have the equitable claims, and we cited, authority in our brief that if the contract was impossible to perform, the complaining party still has restitution available to them. Right.
So you weren't permitted to raise unjust enrichment. I know you raised it and claimed it, but in the proceeding dealing with the motion to dismiss, where did that fall out?
The motion to dismiss, I believe the trial court dismissed those claims. The trial court did dismiss those claims. Obviously, we appealed, and the Court of Appeals said we were allowed to plead them in the alternative. We believe that there is a contract here. However, you know, there's issues about whether it's illusory, and if in the event that the court ends up finding or that there is not, in fact, a contract, we should be allowed to pursue those equitable claims. And we cited a number of cases in our brief saying, you know, we're allowed to plead them in the alternative. We're not trying to recover under both. It's an alternative claim in the event that the breach of contract claim or the parties, in fact, don't have a contract. In fact, that's what defense counsel's arguing. He's arguing that there is no contract to provide the season. He's saying when they emailed over the season pass, that was done and that there's no more contract. So if that's the case and the court agrees with that was the contract and it was completed, then we have our equitable claims left. So in either event, the Court of Appeals was correct to allow this claim to go forward. We paid money, the plaintiff paid money for something she did not receive, and whether that's recoverable under a contract theory or an unjust enrichment theory, none of the arguments the defense makes about the revocable license or the language of the contract change that fact. So we would ask for this court to affirm the Court of Appeals. And unless there's any more questions, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Hudson, you have a little over 2 minutes.
Thank you, and may it please the court, I'll work fast. In terms of the season pass, there's a lot of discussion by Valentine's counsel about the season being a right. It's not a right. It's a privilege under the law, and it's a privilege of access that's conditional. And I think that's important to point out as an initial key, because that's a fundamental disagreement that we have, and it is essential to the outcome of this claim in terms of considering the idea that they're espousing that you have a revocable license and a contract at the same time, or whether we have a contract on the side for the sale of the season pass and a revocable license that controls the relationship going forward. And I think that's important.
So you don't argue then that the language, all operating dates and hours are subject to change without notice, and all rides and attractions are subject to closing and for cancellation or weather conditions. You don't make that argument at all, or are you saying that only attaches to your revocable license?
Correct. That's part of the revocable license, and it's conditional in nature. And so the definition of season, as we have set forth in our brief, is when something is best or available. That is consistent, by the way, with the geographic issues that Cedar Fair faces with its parks in a number of different areas. Defining season as they're proposing it should be defined puts a date restriction on it, that would be an impossibility or improper for other locations and other parks. So they're asking this court to read terms and language into the season pass that simply does not exist and would be inconsistent with the conditional privilege of access that's granted by a revocable license.
So how do you define season?
Season is when something is best or available, and that's straight from the Black's Law Dictionary definition. The Sixth District conveniently overlooked that section of the definition when it rendered this finding that somehow it should be connected with prior dates of operation, which doesn't make sense when you look at the bigger picture of what Cedar Fair has in terms of season passes for its parks.
So it doesn't matter whether somebody pays for a season pass or is gifted a season pass, no difference, right?
Well, you can't transfer it. So if they're gifted a season pass, someone would have to engage in the contract analysis and purchase it and put somebody else's name on it. So a revocable license by its very nature is not transferable. So there would be no gift in this case. And that is another distinct contract difference, right? If it were a contract, it could be purchased and assigned to somebody else. Here, that's not the case. And these passes are unique. They cannot be transferred or assigned.
So I couldn't buy my husband a season pass with my credit card, right?
You can buy it with your credit card. You'd have to put his information on it at the time of purchase. That purchase and sale of the season pass, what you want on that pass is going to have to be negotiated at the time of contract. And that if it is for your husband, then it would have to say, I'm buying a season pass for my husband, and you'd put that name on there at the time of the contract. As it relates to the case law, they mentioned, let me make this point. As it relates to closings, one or two closings, a week of closings, Cedar Point nobody's ever argued, actually, that Cedar Point couldn't close its park for a tornado warning, water main break. In fact, those circumstances happened in the past. They'll happen in the future. We should expect that. And if they're entitled to close for those conditions, then most certainly they're entitled to close for the greatest health pandemic that we've seen during our lifetimes. It just doesn't make sense if there's a conclusion to the contrary. And that's true whether it's a one-month closure, a two-month closure, or the majority of the season. Fortunately, what we have here is the park was able to open on July 9th, and people had access to a 2020 season. It may not have been what they expected, right? It may not be the popular opinion, right? Whether it's in this court or outside in the matter of public opinion. But offering no refund in this circumstance is the right legal conclusion to maintain the integrity of revocable licenses under Ohio law.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, we call a recess.
All rise.